Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hi, Pastor Dave.
How are you today?
You know, I'm doing really good. I got my piano tuned yesterday. It hasn't been tuned in a long time. Ooh. And someone gave me some work to do that I'm really enjoying doing.
Hey.
So I'm quite happy. What about you?
Well, I'm fine. But I have something. I'm kind of excited about sharing that. I thought it was so funny. Since we today are going to finish up, well, we're looking at the 9th and 10th plague and kind of finishing up the 10 plagues, I found something that talks about the number 10. It doesn't relate except for the idea of 10.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the 10 messages at the psychiatric hotline.
Oh, no.
So when you call the psychiatric hotline, it will say, "Hello, this is the psychiatric hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly."
Okay.
If you are codependent, ask somebody to press 2 for you. If you have bipolar affective disorder, please leave a message after the beep, before the beep, and after the beep.
Okay.
I hope no one's going to be offended. This is just meant for fun, you know. If you have low self-esteem, please hang up. All operators are too busy to talk to you.
That would be me.
If you have attention deficit disorder, ADD, wander away from the phone and do something else.
That would be me too.
If you are dyslexic, press 69696969696969.
Okay.
If you suffer from social phobia, do not press 7, but hang up and go to a party. If you have amnesia, press 8 and state your name, address, telephone number, address, and your mother's maiden name. If you have short-term memory loss, press 9. 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 If you have short-term memory loss, press 9.
We get the idea.
Press 9. Okay. If you have post-traumatic stress disorder, slowly and carefully press 000. Thank you for calling the psychiatric hotline.
Oh, those are great.
That's your top 10 answers on an outgoing message of the psychiatric hotline.
You know, I think that all of us can identify with at least part of at least one of those, possibly more.
Oh, many, many. Well, with that, why don't we turn to the story in Egypt with plague number 9. Let's continue our reading, Exodus chapter 10, beginning at verse 21.
Then the Lord said to Moses,
"Stretch out your hand towards the sky so the darkness will spread over Egypt, darkness that can be felt."
So Moses stretched out his hand toward the sky, and total darkness covered all Egypt for 3 days. No one could see anyone else or leave his place for 3 days. Yet all the Israelites had light in the places where they lived. Then Pharaoh summoned Moses and said, "Go, worship the Lord. Even your women and children may go with you. Only leave your flocks and herds behind." But Moses said, "You must allow us to have sacrifices and burnt offerings to present to the Lord our God. Our livestock, too, must go with us. Not a hoof is to be left behind. We have to use some of them in worshiping the Lord our God. And until we get there, we will not know what we are to use to worship the Lord." But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he was not willing to let them go. Pharaoh said to Moses, "Get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again. The day you see my face, you will die." "Just as you say," Moses said, "I will never appear before you again." I remember a couple of years ago, maybe others remember, there was this eclipse. Do you remember that, Pastor Dave?
Yes, it covered about half of the United States. That's the one you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Happened during the day, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I remember my roommate wanted to go and be nearest to where it would be totally dark. I didn't really think that it would be all that big a deal, but I went anyway. And I was wrong. As the eclipse came nearer and nearer, you felt that darkness. And at the moment of total eclipse, it felt like night during the day.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
And as amazing as that is, this darkness that went over Egypt wasn't an eclipse, and it was even deeper dark than that. It was, there's a couple theories out there of what it might have been. Could have been fog, could have been a sandstorm. There's whole suggestions. But the point is, the people were in total darkness. They couldn't see their hand in front of their faces, candles and lights, fires. They didn't work. And when you're in that total darkness, it does feel cold and dreary, and all of the senses are affected by the darkness, not just sight.
Yeah, but the most amazing thing of all, the Egyptians worshipped Ra, the sun god, and he was totally shut out by this darkness. They saw that there was something bigger than their sun god.
And that's the Lord God. Probably a great demonstration finally to Pharaoh that the Lord is a power to be reckoned with, if not the only God. The other thing, too, about this darkness is it's foreshadowing what would happen when Jesus came and was crucified. It says, "For hours there was darkness over the earth, and people felt that darkness." And the darkness came because when you're in total darkness, and I'm speaking now of sighted people who all of a sudden are shut into darkness,
mm-hmm.
or when you first lose your sight and go blind, those first hours, they're frightening. You don't know where you're going, what you're doing. Now, you and I who are blind, once we understand, we acclimate. But this is the type of darkness that immediately comes and catches you so that you don't know anything. And that is what God was trying to demonstrate both in Egypt and with Jesus on the cross, that darkness separates us completely from God. We have no direction, no concept, no point to go to God because we are shut out from him.
Before we move on from this plague, I have a question.
Yeah.
Pharaoh said to Moses, "Get out of my sight. I never want to see your face again." I have to find that a bit amusing because it was totally dark.
Ah, you know, you raised this question earlier and I had a look and I finally think I have an answer. An answer I think I finally have. Anyway, I'll have to think about that one. Moses said the darkness will be for 3 days. And when he went back to Pharaoh then, and Pharaoh said, you can go, but don't take a sheep, the 3 days were over, and they could see by that time. And so Moses was demonstrating the Lord not only made it dark, but he brought back the light. And that's amazing, really, because to be able to do one thing, okay, but then to do two things, take the darkness away, bring the light back, God did both. And so Moses could see him face to face at that point. And as he said, he would never see him again. And now I have a question for you, Cecilia. Oh. There were 3 days of darkness, right?
Yes.
And no one could see anything in the land of Egypt, but there was plenty of light in the land of Goshen where the Israelites were, right?
Right.
So why didn't the Israelites just get up and leave?
What do you mean?
They could have just gotten up and left, and the Egyptians couldn't have seen them leave or anything because they were in total darkness. How come they didn't do that?
I don't know.
And that's because God wanted to show Pharaoh he was in charge. He is God. And he will do it when he wants to and how he wants to. That's why he kept hardening Pharaoh's heart. It's leading up to the final plague, number 10, because that is not just the freedom of the Israelites from bondage of slavery in Egypt, but this points to the freedom that Christians have from the bondage of sin that we have, because it would be the firstborn of God, Jesus, who died to free us from our sin. Darkness was there to show us our sin. Now the 10th plague will be coming to bring us salvation. Let's read on now with Exodus chapter 11. This will introduce the 10th plague, starting at verse 1 through verse 7.
Now, the Lord had said to Moses,
I will bring one more plague on the Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here. And when he does, he will drive you out completely. Tell the people that men and women alike are to ask their neighbors for articles of silver and gold.
The Lord made the Egyptians favorably disposed toward the people, and Moses himself was highly regarded in Egypt by Pharaoh's officials and by the people. So Moses said, this is what the Lord says. About midnight, I will go throughout Egypt. Every firstborn son in Egypt will die. From the firstborn son of Pharaoh, who sits on the throne, to the firstborn son of the slave girl who is at her handmill, and all the cattle as well. There will be loud wailing throughout Egypt, worse than there has been or ever will be again. But among the Israelites, not a dog will bark at any man or animal. Then you will know that the Lord makes distinction between Israel and Egypt.
In order to help give us a even better and broader perspective of the plagues that happen in Egypt, Cecilia and I had a neat idea.
Yes, we did. We have a friend. Actually, he's my pastor. Pastor Kevin Parviz is the pastor of Congregation Kiva Shalom here in St. Louis. And Pastor Kevin, first of all, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
And second, why such an odd name for a congregation?
Kiva Shalom is Hebrew. It stands for life and peace. Mm-hmm. And our motto is life in Yeshua and peace with God. I mean, the reality is that without Messiah Yeshua, there can be no life and there can be no peace with God.
For the listener's sake, you were actually born into the Jewish religion as a Jew and became a Christian later?
Yes, I was in my 30s when I came to faith in Jesus.
Ah. Tell us briefly how that happened.
Essentially, when I got married, by the time I got to college, I was in, most Jewish kids and most kids in general, when they go to college, they sort of lose any kind of spiritual grounding they have. And I was probably more secular than anything. I did not believe in God, although I did give lip service as a rash young man to being an atheist. But I don't think I ever actually didn't believe in God, but I certainly didn't give him much thought. In my second year of college, I met a young lady who was a Missouri Synod Lutheran. I had never heard of a Missouri Synod Lutheran before. I just figured she was some kind of weird Catholic. and she also was a bit ungrounded because of college, I suppose. And good or bad, we started dating. Over time, as we started having children and I got out of school and we moved to Denver and I started a new business, she found herself pretty well alone with a new baby. And I was working 20 hours a day on my business. She wanted to go back to church and she went back to a Lutheran church, an LCMS church in Denver. And they went to church for years, faithfully, through me and her, pretty much I'm not attending. She's schlepping the kids, four of them by that time, all by herself.
Wow.
And just her faithfulness. And then, she suckered me into a small group called Parents of Preschoolers, which I didn't realize was one of the share groups of that church. But those people just became my dearest friends. And over time, along with my little girl who started witnessing to me when she was two or three, I eventually came to faith.
Well, we invited you here to talk about especially the 10th plague, but I do have a quick question first on the 9th plague. We just talked about that here in room 4216, darkness. I'm curious, do you think from your background and history, from what you know, this darkness, were candles, lamps, fires, could they see that? Because it almost sounds like they couldn't see even that.
Right. I think it was I personally think it was almost a historical blindness on the part of Egypt. And I think it was, I think this was an absolute darkness. It wasn't, there was no lighting an oil lamp and seeing across the room in those 3 days.
And that makes sense to what we had said even earlier. It points to our spiritual darkness that we cannot see God or see things spiritually. And what Jesus experienced on the cross during the 3 hours, he suffered that total darkness for us as well.
Yeah, and I think it's, God has a wonderful sense of rhythm. And the 3 days in Egypt and the 3 hours on the cross, the 3 days in the tomb where darkness, spiritual darkness, had descended upon the land because even the disciples had lost their hope.
Okay. And
then Jesus, of course, becoming the 10th plague, the redeemer of the 10th plague.
And that moves us into why we really wanted to talk to you. Thank you.
To summarize the 10th plague, what God told Moses, and then what happened from there?
I'm sure. I'll probably mess it up without the scriptures in front of me, but I can summarize it.
Oh, you've done this 100 times.
I mean, God said to Moses, tell your people to take the fatted lamb, the perfect sacrifice, the blemish-free lamb, to bring it in, sacrifice it, put his blood in a basin, and paint it on the doorposts of the home.
Why paint it on the doorposts?
I mean, in one hand, I think the reasons the scriptures say is that the angel of death is going to come and take the firstborn of every man on every animal and every beast of the field in Egypt. And the way the scriptures portray it, when the angel of death sees the blood on the doorpost, it will pass over that home. Now, frankly, the angel of death doesn't need that sign to know the faithful in that room, but it's also a visible image for those inside to say this blood is protecting us. And so it creates, you know, I'm always amazed by science fiction. I love science fiction. And so you know, when you hear of a virus outbreak and you hear about the hermetically sealed rooms and all of the things, that's really kind of what happened. They hermetically sealed their homes with the blood of that lamb to protect them from this plague that was going to come across the land. And, you know, we sit here in this time of COVID-19 and we huddle in our homes and quarantine. Fortunately, we do have lots of distractions to keep us busy with the internet and television and things like that. But even with all of that, people still huddle in fear. And one can imagine in that time in Egypt, especially with, and you know, I can't, it's hard to picture this plague, frankly, without the movie Ten Commandments running in my head. You know, I grew up with that every year, and you hear, as the Israelites are in their homes, you hear the cries in the distance of people who are finding their children dead. And, you know, God doesn't want us huddling in fear, so he gives us something to do. And so we take that lamb, and after we've poured its blood into the basin, we stay busy. We roast the lamb, and we roast it all, and we eat that lamb, and we make bread that's never going to rise because we're getting ready to schlep out of there pretty fast. He wants us to be prepared. So we use this time of plague to prepare ourselves spiritually for leaving bondage and entering into the freedom that is the children of God. And I think that's a good lesson for us during COVID-19, especially for us who are having to worship remotely and all of that. We're not huddling in fear in our homes. We're using this time to prepare ourselves to leave the bondage of this flesh and enjoy the freedom of the promised land that God has for us now in heaven.
There are more insights that Pastor Kevin, born a Jew, become Christian, has to say concerning the 10th plague, such as the following question.
Can you relate what this historical event meant to you prior to becoming a Christian, just as a Jew, as you heard this being related on a yearly basis?
You know, we, and I think like anything else, in the church, we have a potentially bad way of...
But sadly, we are running short of time, and so we invite you to return to Room 4216 to hear what Pastor Kevin has to say next time. Until then...
We welcome your feedback and comments. Please write to us at info@not-alone.net. And as God constantly reminds us,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to Room 4216.
Credits. Our thanks to Pastor Kevin Parviz of Congregation Chai V'Shalom, and our interlude musicians, Robert Vaughn and Terry Nord.